Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Championship Monday was electric as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Will Hill in once again for Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Jam-packed 2 hours ahead. The Florida Panthers finally stopped leaking oil. They win their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. We also saw the Tennessee Volunteers end the drought for a number one overall seed to win the College World Series. Both games ended in dramatic fashion, but you know we got to start in Sunrise, Florida, Will. And the collective sigh of relief from everyone that was a Florida backer, a Florida fan, anything like that, not to pull the ultimate choke job in the Cup final.
Yeah, it was just a great sporting event. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was intense. It was everything a Game 7 supposed to be. When Florida scored early and Verhage got the first goal, I think like 14-1 odds, a few minutes in, and that killed everybody's no-score first 10 minutes bet. When Florida got that first one early, though, I was like, oof, they needed that. Take a sigh of relief, take a deep, deep breath. And then Edmonton matches like a minute later. You say, uh-oh. But we went a long time without a goal after that. So, you know, those of us that sprinkled a little under 1.5 for the first period, you're sitting there saying, how did I lose under 1.5 first period? There were three goals the entire game. It ended up, you know, sometimes you see this in baseball where, you know, both teams scored 3 or 4 runs in the first inning, then nobody scores for a while. That was a case where if you had the first period under, you had the right idea. It was a low scoring game. It's just, you know, bad break. It didn't get home, but just a lot of fun. McDavid, I really thought that was fascinating to watch the Conn Smythe odds at the end of, as the first quarter was winding down, the first period was winding down. I think I checked the odds for the first time. I'm curious about these markets. These markets with awards are fascinating. It was down to -1600. Then it just kept ticking down. And by the time the last line I saw, it was McDavid, a very small favorite. I think -150 at some of the books. And then he wins the award and wins it pretty easily. Let me ask you, did you think when they were about to announce the award, did you think it was going to McDavid, or did you think Bobrovsky was going to do it?
So we were texting about it, and I thought ultimately that it was still going to be Connor McDavid, but when we were texting, I was laughing because I was like, this market is drunk right now in the Conn Smythe, just the way that the numbers were moving all over the place. But I did feel ultimately that it was going to be Connor McDavid, and I'm sure this is an unpopular opinion, especially for how many people I know have Sergei Bobrovsky tickets and were thinking that maybe there was a chance ultimately that you could get that home at a good number. But to remember that this isn't a Stanley Cup final award, and it's not an award that goes to the best player on the team that wins the Cup final. It goes to the player who was the best in all of the postseason. And this is a guy in Connor McDavid who is rewriting the record books. He's 5 points away from Gretzky's all-time scoring record. He breaks Gretzky's assist record. First player in NHL Stanley Cup history to score 4 points in back-to-back nights in the Cup final. Made it to Game 7 and only lose by one, right? And listening to Connor McDavid after the game, like, it was clear that that's not what was on his mind at all. You cannot blame him one bit for not going out on the ice afterwards. It's a tough thing to swallow there, but I think that he was the rightful favorite. I think the number that we saw going into the game yesterday, like -3 to 5,000, was a little bit ridiculous. And that was just trying to get people off of betting Connor McDavid ultimately, right? Like, is that the perspective that you had?
I did. I think I asked every hockey guest yesterday and all the shows I was doing my podcast, hey, is this -3,000? Is this right? Now, of course, you couldn't really bet the field or the no. It was like you said, they're just trying to get you off McDavid. I did bet Bobrovsky 25-1 sometime. Was it late first period, early second period?
Just you were live there for a minute. Honestly, I feel like you were live there for a minute. It felt like it could go that way.
I should have bought back once McDavid got low. That's the one mistake I made. I was like a pizza bet. I just, you know what, for the hell of it. So it wasn't that much, but in retrospect, I should have looked back. I should have bet back the other way because it was only going to be one of those two. So it was fascinating. Maurice, the Panthers coach, I thought was a big star of the night just after the game. All of his quotes, very likable, very funny. These hockey coaches are grinders. And you could say this for any coach in any sport, but I actually know the Quinnipiac coach, who's a local guy, won the national championship 2 years ago, 2023 with Quinnipiac. I know him a little bit, and man, you read a story like his and, you know, he's holding practices at midnight, making no money, teaching high school history. A lot of these coaches follow that path where, you know, Maurice was started with the Whalers in 95. The other coach, Knobloch, started this year actually with the Hartford Wolfpack. These guys go through a lot. These guys, make very little money at the beginning. And I just thought Maurice came across very well. A lot of very quotable expressions at the end of the game. Hey, we had to lose 3 to win the 4th. Something about hugging sweaty men. I mean, he was just funny. He was he was very thoughtful. I really enjoyed him. I don't know if you had any interaction with him in your time in the league, but I thought he came off very well in victory.
Very likable. And you talk about being a grinder, right? This is his 26th season in the NHL. Yeah. And I was looking through the numbers this morning. He coached 1,848 regular season games, 1,986 when you include the playoffs. Both were the most ever by a coach in Stanley Cup history before he had finally won. Like, it reminded me of all the talk that we had about Xander Schauffele and the stats that you give, like how many wins and how many events that he had played in, or top twos or top fives or top tens without winning. Well, Paul Maurice finally won one. Here is him on Sportsnet after the game.
It's just brilliant, right? It's I've never hugged so many sweaty men in my entire life. I'm not sure I'm going to do it again, but I'm going to do it tonight. So, you know what? It's not what I thought it would be. It's so much better. All of the people that suffered through 30 years of me losing, making excuses, mom and dad especially. Hey, Dad, your name's going up with your heroes. Beliveau, Richard, Hal, Lindsay, Maurice.
You can't help but get chills listening to that. And maybe that's just because, like, I'm somebody who's really close with my dad. But thinking about, especially the Stanley Cup, the trophy of all trophies, right? They call it the hardest to win in professional sports for a reason. And the significance of it and having your name etched on that thing for eternity, it's just the coolest thing in the world. And I love that for Paul Maurice.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I think at least as I get older, look, we're a betting network. I'm more of a bettor than I'm still a fan, but there's a betting. When you're a fan and a bettor, it's two different things, but there is some part of me, at least, that's a fan that I'll never get tired of. They never get old when you see these celebrations, just the emotion, what it takes to win those last few seconds. I thought McDonough did a tremendous job. He's a good announcer. I know I've heard behind the scenes, maybe, you know, he's difficult to work with, things like that. He's a great announcer. He knows when to get excited. I thought he was tremendous in the game last night. And just the last few seconds, there's just nothing like the excitement of it. And, you know, one goal game, we didn't get the cheap empty netter. That ball, the net, the puck got stuck in the corner there for a few seconds. You can just kind of tell, hey, 11 seconds, 10, 9, we're not going to get any drama here. They just couldn't get anything out of it. And time expired and everyone went crazy. And it was just a lot of fun to watch.
Okay, a couple things there. One, I know Sean McDonough caught a lot of flack throughout this series because he was sick and he didn't have a ton of energy for a handful of games. I thought he was wonderful the last few. And I have worked with Sean McDonough on a couple of games and he treated me awesome. So I can only speak to my personal experiences there. But to go back to the third period of this game and how you talk about from a betting perspective, how you're watching things, I'm obviously sweating out a Florida series ticket in this game because we lost our first period under. I thought that was a Fugazi first period. So I quickly bet the under 5.5, which was still the price after those two goals were scored. Just the juice was significantly less. Like pre-flop, we were minus 155. I think I got minus 115. Neither here nor there. That third period, the final 10 minutes, I am losing my mind, Will. Like the goosebumps I have up and down my body, the adrenaline that I'm feeling. Edmonton, don't you do this to me, because the last thing that I need, like everything for me was stress down the stretch. You think about those net front battles at one point when Sergei Bobrovsky loses his stick, what's going to happen? It was just, like, I thought that it was an awesome, super entertaining finish. For so many people that don't typically watch hockey, if that's the one game that you tuned into all year, you were entertained as hell, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you and I, we actually made a bad line because it was listed at 8:20 puck drop. And we like pushed it back another 8-10 minutes, but it was supposed to be 8 o'clock. So they were already ahead of, they built
Correct.
It in. We were supposed to start at 8 and then it was 22 minutes. So we didn't take that into account. Your sports book would have gotten absolutely pounded if you hung that number. You hung a bad number.
But conceptually, I was correct, right. Will, right? Like had I seen 8 o'clock as the initial time,
right.
Then my
yes.
cap was correct. But I saw 8:20, which then threw everything off.
And Verhaeghe, 14-1. It's funny. I was scanning the first goal scorers.
Yeah.
He crossed my mind. A couple guys crossed my mind. So that was interesting that he got it. Hopefully, you know, a few people out there cash. So those are always fun. Those it's almost like the first touchdown score bet in football where you get that instant gratification. It's two things at play. You get the instant gratification and you can bet a little to win a lot. So those are always a lot of fun.
Well, and you mentioned off the top too, how significant we felt going in that first goal was ultimately going to be. And I still think even with Edmonton equalizing rather quickly, that was just a moment that they needed so badly, especially that it did come from Carter Verhaeghe because he hadn't scored a goal since game one of this series. He's one of their better players. A lot of people had been questioning, is something wrong with him? Is he fully healthy? What's going on? So for him to be the guy to score that goal, I did think was significant in that moment. Then Sam Reinhart ultimately delivers the game-winning goal with 2-1, our final. He was particularly quiet the last three games as well. So a huge go-ahead goal from him, and it was a snipe. Fourth player in NHL history to score 50 goals in the regular season and a cup-clinching goal in the Stanley Cup final the same year. And again, like, to go back from a storyline standpoint, because I personally am a fan of this sport, right? And I'm a new fan, too. Like, I didn't start following the NHL really until the Golden Knights came into existence, and now I am a diehard and I'm very invested. But for this team to have last year gone all the way to the Stanley Cup final, lose in the fashion that they did against the Golden Knights, especially that game five obliteration, right? And they didn't have anybody out there on the ice. So many guys were injured. Matthew Tkachuk, who ultimately ends up winning the cup and getting that opportunity to raise it over his head, he couldn't even play with a broken sternum in game five last year. So for them to come all the way back, be in the situation that they were in, up 3-0, see what Edmonton does, and have to force that game seven and ultimately win. Like, just from a storyline perspective, I thought it was so cool. But you do feel for Edmonton that the Canadian drought continues.
Yep, and I don't get any credit because I was of the belief, hey, I got a feeling Edmonton would win all weekend. Then on Monday, when we were doing the show yesterday, you and I were talking on the air and off the air. My antenna was up, but hey, everybody seems to like them. You actually, I think Circa closed plus 107 on Florida, like a 60-70 cent move from where game five was in Florida. Sometimes you got to be a little too careful. You call it, what do you call it? The contrarian play on Florida.
Yeah, but you have to do the old English though when you say it, the contrarian play.
I wish you would do the whole show in that voice.
The Florida Panthers, by the way, 9-1 co-favorites with the Stars to win it all again next year. The Oilers are plus 950. I can't do it. I'm sorry. We got to hit the break, but we are just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we come back, JJ Redick had some interesting comments in his introductory presser in LA and why this three-time Super Bowl champ does think Rodgers missing minicamp was significant.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Our NFL betting guide is dropping this Thursday. There's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber with our all-new NFL betting guide. It's your secret weapon for the upcoming season. We've got in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems and trends, and you'll have all the tools you need to bet the season smarter. Plus, our experts are sharing their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insight you need ahead of the year. To get the guide, though, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we're giving our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. It's usually $240. You can subscribe now for just $199 when you use our promo code Lombardi. Plus, we're throwing in an extra month for free. So that's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do here at the network, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Don't miss out. Our new NFL betting guide is coming out Thursday, VSiN.com/subscribe. And again, use that promo code Lombardi.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Let's do it, Will. News or noise? JJ Redick was officially introduced as the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers yesterday. Had some interesting sound bites coming through, including, I don't know if you guys heard, but I've never coached in the NBA before. Well played there, sir. But he also had a viral moment when asked about any misconceptions about him during the hiring process, if he wanted to clear them up. What do you say, JJ?
What misconceptions or concerns about you that you've heard in the last few weeks are you the most like looking forward to dispelling when you're the coach?
It's a valid question. However, I don't really have a great answer for your question because I really don't give a like, honestly. I want to coach the Lakers. I want to coach the team. I don't want to dispel anything. I don't. I want to become a great coach in the NBA, and I want to win championships, and I want my players to maximize their careers. That's all I care about.
News or noise, Will, what you got?
First off, it reminds me of when I tell you off the air, hey, I really don't want to do these game show type of things. I really don't give a bleep. That was the exact. So he stole your quote. Wow. That was your quote that he stole. Noise, their best player is 40. Their best player is 40. He could be Red Auerbach. He could be Phil Jackson. Their best player is 40. So they're not going to win anything. I thought he came across very well. He sounds very smart. Everyone says with X's and O's, he's brilliant, just an incredibly smart guy. But their best player is 40, and they don't have that many assets. So They've been a playing team pretty much like the last 4 years, and I would think they continue to be a playing team. And that's with pretty good health from LeBron and Davis the past couple of years. So the West is tough. They're a good team, but they're not a contender. So no worries.
Yeah, there were a few things I did find questionable, speaking to that exact point where he said, I don't look at the current roster as being that far off from being a championship caliber team.
What's he
going to
say?
You're barely playing caliber from what we've seen right now.
Right.
And speaking of that 40-year-old player in LeBron James, I thought it was also interesting that he said that he didn't have any conversations with LeBron about the head coaching job until he had been hired this past week, which is,
no.
You laugh because it is laughable. We did learn more about the terms, though, for J.J. Redick per Shams, 4-year, $8 million per year deal. Happy 40th birthday. That is a nice thing that I would like to have hit the account on my birthday, unfortunately, next month. Remember that, Will. Next month, my birthday. Let's get it locked
what
and loaded
day?
on the direct wire. July 13th.
Noted.
Let's go to the San Francisco 49ers, where Brandon Ayuk had a viral moment of his own this past week when he was on a FaceTime with his former ASU quarterback, who's now, of course, QB1 for the Washington Commanders, Jaden Daniels. He said that San Francisco doesn't want me. According to ESPN's Ryan Clark, the team had a meeting with Brandon Ayuk this Monday. We don't know what came from it yet, but the meeting, news or noise?
Noise. I'm not making a bet or not making a bet off of a meeting. I will say, like, going forward, and you're a 49ers fan, you know this well, windows don't stay open forever, and you have a lot of good players, and it almost backfires when you have a lot of good players because you can't pay them all. You're going to have to pay Purdy soon. You know, I mean, just go down the line. McCaffrey and Kittle and Debo and Ayuk and Bosa, Trent Williams. It's hard to have an all-star team in the NFL, and they have close to an all-star team, so at some point, it's going to be hard to keep all these guys, so keep that in mind. But as far as this year, to me, it's still noise.
Oh, yeah, and I think that they're both going to play this year. And it's not that the 49ers don't want you. They want you. They just don't want to pay you the number that you currently want right now. So hopefully that meeting Monday was a step in the right direction to get him on the field come training camp and to remind him, Brandon, we love you. You're amazing. You're not Justin Jefferson. We're $35 million. Let's figure something else out here. The NCAA has presented a plan to Division I conference commissioners that would expand the men's and women's college basketball tournaments by 4 or 8 teams, alongside an option to leave each field at 68. The NCAA would keep its 64-team bracket, but would add play-in games involving seeds 10 through 12. News or noise? What do you think?
It's news. I mean, it's not shocking news. Every sport, baseball's adding playing teams, NBA adds playing teams, college football, everyone's going to make the playoffs now. It's just the way it is. It's printing money. It's more revenue. I guess what's the difference between 72 and 76? I mean, I've never thought, hey, the 74th team was going to win it all. How could you leave them out? But this year would have been teams like St. John's and Indiana State, which are fun teams. So I get it. It's more things to bet on. It's more things to watch. It's more revenue for everybody. So look, they're not cutting back. None of these sports are cutting back. Say, hey, you take some of the money. We're going to go back to a pure sport and fewer teams in this postseason. It's more, more, more. It's more money. It's more teams. It's more playoffs. So it's news. It's interesting. I don't have a problem with this as much as I do the expansion in some of these other sports.
Oh, you mean like in college football, where before we've even seen what 12 looks like in the expanded playoff, that we're already expanding it again? Like, let's relax for a moment, shall we? In college basketball, though, Kansas, Alabama, and two-time defending champion UConn are all co-favorites at 10-1 going into next season. On the women's side, South Carolina, who's won 2 of the last 3 women's tournament, they are a big favorite at plus 180 to go back-to-back. Woof. Julian Edelman said this past week on The Herd with Colin Cowherd that Aaron Rodgers skipping mandatory minicamp is a, quote, bad look. Tell us more, Julian.
You know, I'm a big Aaron Rodgers fan, but if I was in that locker room and Aaron Rodgers wasn't there for 3 days on the mandatory minicamps,
having played 4 snaps last year,
having played 4 snaps off of an injury when we have 2 new receivers, we got a bunch of new linemen that we added to the team with a CBA that doesn't allow us to practice a lot. You know, I guarantee there's 4 or 5 guys, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys in that locker room sitting there like, where's he at? I think it's a bad look for your leader, for whatever reason, to go and miss an unexcused absence. I mean, I was with Tom Brady in his 25th year or 23rd year, and he started missing OTAs here and there, but he was still there, never missed a mandatory minicamp.
Well, coming from a guy like Julian Edelman, who's won 3 Super Bowls, been a Super Bowl MVP, knows what a winning culture looks like, do you put any more stock in these comments, news or noise?
I still think it's noise. He made a compelling case. I do agree it's a bad look. Look, you made a lot of money. You played 4 plays. You got hurt. I mean, this is a chance to be out there with your team. I don't like it, but I don't know. I can't get wrapped up in these June stories, whether he's practicing or not. They've got a good team. I mean, are you really going to fade the Jets because he missed a couple days in June? I think they've got a good defense. I think their offensive line is much better. I think you can get Rodgers playing at a level where he's like an average quarterback. They're going to have a lot of wins because they got absolute dog crap quarterback last year and still won 7 games. So I still think it's noise.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, missing an offseason workout isn't the end of the world, especially considering how much he actually did do on the field. But I agree with the concept that it's a bad look because this isn't voluntary minicamp, right? That is the mandatory portion of it. We know these dates very far in advance. And so I think that especially if you're like Robert Saleh or you're a Jets fan or you're a Jets backer, you would like to see him out there on the field. Let's go to Carolina here quickly. Adam Thielen, during a recent appearance on the Rich Eisen show, said it's been an awesome offseason so far for Bryce Young. Said you can tell Bryce's demeanor in the building. He's just more comfortable. Said he's hit the ground running with urgency, confidence, and comfort in the system, facility, and locker room. News or noise?
I will go with noise because unless you can ever picture somebody saying the opposite, you can't take it seriously. What's he gonna say? Hey, he looks terrible. I can't believe we drafted him first overall. If you see how small he is, like, he's not gonna say that. It's his own guy. He's gonna be positive. These players are gonna be positive. I have heard, like, Adam Chernoff was a really good football handicapper. He's on my podcast. He's made a case for Carolina as being his sleeper team, a fringe wild card team, he called him. He said, hey, with Canales has gotten the best out of Russell Wilson in the past. I'm trying to think through the other. Oh, Baker Mayfield last year. So there is a little, hey, maybe this is, and he made this comparison to the Jaguars with Urban Meyer. We just, hey, you throw out the first year, bad coaching staff, bad roster, everything just got off the wrong foot, and maybe he can reset. But I can't go too crazy here about Adam Thielen being, you know, enthusiastic just because I think players are always going to say stuff like this.
I agree.
There was a lot of noise here.
Yeah, I agree. No one this time of year is saying, boy, like, yeah, our quarterback's going to suck, right? But
yes.
I do think that there's some truth to the comments, though, too, and that Bryce Young last year had a lot of stuff to deal with multiple voices in his head, Thomas Brown and Frank Reich both. Now you're just going to have a singular voice in Dave Canales, to your point. And I mean, this Panthers offensive line last year, one of the worst in the league, tied for the second most sacks allowed on a quarterback with 65. He's still a capable quarterback. And I think with Canales and with a new upgraded offensive line, ideally things will be a little bit better there. Okay. Lots of noise. You are correct. We are going to take a little bit of a break here when we return on the Lombardi Line. We're looking into the crystal ball to determine the NFL futures. See what I did there? That was a joke. This time I didn't write it down. Be proud of me, Will. But what I did write down is that we are hitting some of our favorite offseason bets in the NFL. Coming up next, plus there's one team we're very different in terms of our opinion on. You be the judge. Who's got the better bet?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are less than 48 hours out from the NFL betting guide dropping. There's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season with in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, betting trends. You'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts are sharing their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need ahead of the year. To get the guide, though, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. Use our promo code Lombardi, because when you do, that usual $240 price is just $199, and we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do when you use that promo code Lombardi. Get daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, and all of our special edition betting guides as they come to keep you betting smarter all year long. Don't miss out. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can sign up. And again, that promo code Lombardi.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts. No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
The share from Clueless in that one.
I was going to quiz you on that. I feel like that was a little before your time, but I guess not.
Big fan. Absolutely love it. Will Great. Hill in for Michael Lombardi today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Let's get into No Way or No Doubt. J.J. Redick had his official introductory press conference yesterday. He is the 8th different head coach the Lakers have had since Phil Jackson in 2010, 11 of the previous 7 none have lasted for more than 3 years with the franchise. No Way or No Doubt will. Reddick will coach in LA for the entirety of his four-year deal, at least four seasons for Reddick.
I will go with No Way. The Lakers, as a fan of the Lakers, I'm very familiar with their front office ownership. They are an absolute disaster from the top down. It's Jeannie Buss, and it's just her letting her buddies run the team. It's really bad. They're dysfunctional. They got lucky and LeBron came there 5 or 6 years ago, and they had enough assets for being so bad the years before. They traded for Davis and they won a title. It's been pretty bad since. This is not going to go well. LeBron's 40. They don't have a lot of assets to trade. They had that ridiculous Westbrook trade. This is not going to last 4 years. So under, No Way, whatever way you want to play it.
Dang. I did find this stat interesting, though. I guess it's not a stat, but it's an interesting nugget of information from ESPN Sports and Information Group. Reddick is LeBron James' 9th head coach in his career, 4th with the Lakers. Eric Spoelstra and Ty Lue, the only coaches who were not fired before LeBron left for a new team. Let's keep it in hoops here.
And he tried with Spoelstra. If you believe the stories, he went up to Riley and was like, you got to get this guy out of here. And Riley said, go back to practice. He's your coach.
Well, and how many games did Ty Lue even last the next season, too? Like, throw that in there. Stay in basketball, though. Klay Thompson, this past week, unfollowed the Warriors. We know that he's going through figuring out his next spot. Is he going to stay with LA? Is he going to move on? It feels like this is the end of the Splash Brothers as we know it. No Way or No Doubt, Klay Thompson should return to the Warriors, finish his career with Golden State. What do you think?
I wish he should. It feels over. And the hardest thing in sports is when a dynasty is past its prime and it's no longer there. It's just knowing what to do. It's very awkward. It's very tough. But I'll say No Way. I think there's better fits. Ironically, an OKC team, which he helped eliminate in very heartbreaking fashion in 2016, that might be the best fit. Somewhere where they have a complete roster and he can just go there and be a dead-eye shooter. Mm-hmm. This Warriors roster is not any good anymore, at least not championship good. They're okay. I think it's time to move on.
Yeah, the Warriors right now 8th on the odds board in the Western Conference at 16-1. Thompson plus 160 to return to Golden State. On the DraftKings Sportsbook, the favorite, Orlando, at plus 110.
What's OKC? Is OKC on there?
Let me pull it up. I wrote down those specific ones. You're hitting me with something I don't know the answer to. I will find out for you in a moment. But let me go to this next one while I look. Paul George, No Way or No Doubt, is the missing piece for the Philadelphia 76ers to make a deep playoff run. What do you think?
I like hosting the show. If it ever got out that I said that the Philadelphia 76ers could sign Paul George and win a championship, Lombardi would get wind of it, and I would just, not only would I not be able to do the show anymore, I might disappear. So we're going No Way. Paul George has never won anything. He's a player that comes up short in these situations. He's older. Embiid's always hurt. I can't trust Embiid. I can't trust any team with Embiid. Lombardi's right. Lombardi's been right about this for a very long time. He's always hurt. He never comes up big. This is a guy who's 30, who has never been to the conference finals. So they're not one piece away. It's not Paul George, so No Way.
What about Luka Doncic? No Way or No Doubt, he will win an NBA title in the next 3 years.
That's a good one. I'll go No Way, just because you still have the Nuggets, you still have the T-Wolves, the Celtics are still, it's hard to win a title. I know people after he lost it, don't worry about it, Luka's going to win multiple championships. It's hard. If you don't win one next year, then all of a sudden you get 26, 27, 28. Like, these years go by quick. I know he's great. I know he's great, but that's not a great roster. They still were a 5 seed this year. The things just kind of broke their way. So I will say No Way.
10-1 next year. I still can't believe how short the Boston Celtics are to repeat, though. Plus 290 in June.
Because the East is so bad.
Ugh. No bueno. By the way, I for some reason, it's not loading. I don't have Klay Thompson's odds readily available. Elliot said he is 10-1 for OKC. So I was looking at Paul George's, though, because I do have those ahead of me. Clippers are minus 280 for him to return there. 76ers 5-1, but the Thunder are sandwiched in between at plus 350.
And I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I've heard whispers of Paul George to the Warriors. I don't know if Ellie can get that number, but 6-1. Those are worth half bets if you want to put those down on the picks page. Half bet on Warriors to get Paul George at 6-1, and then half bet on Klay to go to OKC at 10.
Okay, let's switch gears from the NBA back to the NFL. Last year, Lamar Jackson won the league MVP at 15-1 preseason odds on DraftKings. Could we see a longer shot come through again? No Way or No Doubt, next year's NFL MVP is 15-1 or higher. And here, I'll throw a couple of names at you. Jalen Hurts is in that window. Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Justin Herbert, and anything sparking anything for you? Is this possible?
certainly possible. I think I'll go no way. I think what happened, and I've talked about this before, Mahomes and Lamar in 2018 and 19 won this award at like 70 and 80 to 1 odds. And then even in 2020, Rodgers won this at 30 to 1. And these books said, you know what? No more. We know it's going to be a quarterback of a good team. We're not giving you 70, 80 to 1, 30 to 1 on these quarterbacks. So all of these numbers are shrunk. Like Trevor Lawrence is 30 to 1. Trevor Lawrence is probably not winning this award. Anybody that's good is pretty much under 50. That's but MVP seems like a bit of a stretch. Hurts maybe in the mix. So it's possible, but I would say it's more unlikely than likely.
You know who's not even on this graphic, though, who's been getting a lot of hype? Jared Goff, 40 to 1.
That's not bad. That's actually not terrible because they could win 11 or 12 games. For all of like the mystery of some of these awards and like what's comeback player of the year, and they started to find that, we know what the MVP is. It's a quarterback of a team that's going to win the division, win 12 or 13 plus games. So Goff has the chance to fit those criteria. He's in a good situation with a good offense, plays indoors, so he can put up some stats. Goff at 40 to 1 is honestly not that bad.
Let's go Super Bowl. Both Super Bowl participants from this past year were short shots at DraftKings entering the season. The Chiefs were plus 550. The 49ers opened 7 to 1. This year, those are the two short shots yet again, but there are a couple of teams that are sub 10 to 1. No way or no doubt, next year's Super Bowl champion is among the short shots at DraftKings this year.
The wording of this is confusing me. So no way or no doubt it's currently 10 to 1 or short. I'll say it's longer than 10 to 1.
Okay, that's the question.
I'll say it's longer than 10 to 1. Just because it's the NFL, it's uncertainty. I don't want to take a number short.
So you're saying no Chiefs, no 49ers, no Ravens.
And I get the rest of the league. So you get those three teams and I get the field. I'll take the field.
Okay. Who do you think that fits that criteria best for you? Who what's a team that you like right now to win the Super Bowl? And I know so much can change. I mean, training camp, who knows who's going to get hurt? We don't know anything yet, but like a team that speaks to you.
Well, you picked the Jets to miss the playoffs. If they were to ever win the Super Bowl, your bet would be in some trouble. I feel like both those bets couldn't win. I don't know. The Jets are worth a shot. I just like the idea that, hey, you get three teams, I get the field. The NFL's so unpredictable. I like having, 32 teams? I like having 29 of the 32 teams.
Okay. Last one here. Go to these rookie quarterbacks. No way or no doubt. More than half of the six QBs who were drafted in the top 12 this year, so four of the six, will be their team's week one starter.
I will say McCarthy. I'll say no doubt. I think May has a chance to start. Caleb, we know, is going to start. Why am I drawing? Daniels, we know, is going to start. Nix is going to start. So it really is that fourth one. Do we get a fourth one? I'll say either May or McCarthy or who's the other one that I'm thinking? Oh, Penix isn't going to start. That's a good question. It's properly lined. I'll say no doubt. I don't know. That's a tough
one. Okay, this is good. We've got dissension because I'm on a no way here. I know we had a good conversation about this yesterday. I do not see Drake May starting week one. Like, they brought in Jacoby Brissett to ease that transition in for this kid.
I think it's unlikely. I don't think it's impossible just because of everything they turned down. Like, they turned down like three ones and more picks. Like, if you like them that much, you're going to wait to what, next year to play them? Maybe.
They're going
to
be so bad, though. So my thing is, like, if we see Drake May or J.J. McCarthy, which I think is entirely possible that we're going to see them this season, I just don't know. I just don't believe that it's week one.
And we mentioned this yesterday. Hey, if you don't think McCarthy's going to play right away, DraftKings has an over-under passing yards prop at like 3,000. No. That to me is an under.
Throw it on out there. Okay, we're going to hit the break. When we come back, we'll get back to a little more NBA. The NBA draft is beginning tomorrow from New York City. Nick Whalen of RotoWire is going to give us his thoughts on how things might shake out. We'll be right back.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and betting news. Today on the homepage, our resident NBA expert Jonathan Von Tobel has his NBA mock draft 2.0 with who goes where, number one overall thoughts, best bets, player position, all that good stuff. Plus, even as we enter the dog days of summer, you can find daily betting previews for games in Major League Baseball, the WNBA, and more, all at VSiN.com. speaking of the NBA draft, hoping to have RotoWire's Nick Whalen join us in a moment. We are one day out, Will, from round one getting underway tomorrow night in NYC, 8 Eastern on ABC. The Atlanta Hawks had a 3% chance of winning the lottery and getting the first overall pick, yet here they are selecting first for the first time since 1985. And the question that we're all asking is, who will they pick? Is it as cut and dry as the odds might indicate right now? How are you feeling as far as number one?
3%. So you're saying there's a chance.
Right, there we go.
I don't know who they're picking. Just shooting texts back and forth, reading everything. The odds certainly seem to indicate it's Risa Shea. Klingon had a lot of steam from 15-1 down to like, not didn't get quite to even money, but like plus 150. But I don't know. It's a big way of saying I don't know. So if you want to take some shots at Saar, at Castle, I don't know. Could Reed Shepard be a fit at number one? I just think there's so much uncertainty. Unless you're getting a plus sign, I wouldn't do anything.
Okay, good perspective. Let's welcome in Nick Whalen on the Progressive Guest Line, RotoWire senior analyst. You can catch him on SiriusXM, NBA Radio. And what do you think, Nick? It doesn't appear like there is a super clear cut number one like last year of Victor Wembanyama when they announced the lottery. He's already being interviewed before we, like a month before draft day, right? So what's your perspective on number one right now?
Yeah, I think that's maybe the biggest storyline going into tomorrow night is that this is, in my mind, the most unpredictable draft that I've evaluated. I think the other one that comes to mind, of course, is the capital A, capital B Anthony Bennett draft in 2013. But the big difference to me between what we're going to see tomorrow night in 2013 is that in that Anthony Bennett draft, the first 14 picks, the entire lottery, were American college players. So at least there was some more familiarity with the player pool, both for, you know, talent evaluators and for the average fan, whereas tomorrow night, we could see, you know, 6 or 7 international or G League players go in the lottery. And I think that's part of the reason it seems like such an unknown. And as far as the number one pick goes, you know, I think we just kind of have to follow the numbers here, follow the trail. It does seem like Zach Risacher is going to be the number one pick. You know, the Hawks have had trouble getting Alex Saar in for a workout. It seems unlikely that that will happen between now and tomorrow night. I think Saar and his camp are trying to steer him toward the Washington Wizards, which is just a crazy thing to say on television that a player is actively trying to play for the Wizards, but it does appear that that's the case. And I think, guys, if Atlanta hangs on to this pick, it's probably going to be Risacher.
All right. So what's the rest of your top five look like? If we just play it out and we say, all right, let's put in Risacher at one and Saar at 2, 3, 4, 5 goes what in your mind?
You know, I think that's obviously where the draft gets really interesting. And, you know, one of the markets that I'm keeping an eye on, guys, is the Donovan Klingon market. You can get him at plus 350 right now to go number 3 overall. That pick, of course, is currently owned by the Houston Rockets. He's 5-1 to go number 4. I don't see him slipping out of one of those two spots. To me, it just comes down to, okay, if we assume the Rockets hang on to their pick at number 3, do they take, in my mind, the best player available and perhaps the safest player available in Donovan Klingon, but also a player who doesn't fill a need, right? This is a team that has Alper and Şengün at center. Would they be willing to kind of ask him to slide down to the 4, bring in more of a defensive-minded player in Klingon? Or do you address what to me might be the bigger need, both in the short term and the long term, and add a guard in Reed Shepard? And that appears to be the prevailing belief, is that if Houston stays in at number 3, they would lean toward Reed Shepard, the freshman guard out of Kentucky. I think maybe he's kind of your long-term succession plan to Fred VanVleet. There's been some rumblings perhaps that, you know, maybe Jalen Green isn't necessarily a long-term fit for the Houston Rockets. So somebody like Reed Shepard could slide in there. You know, I think if Donovan Klingon's on the board at number 4 for the Spurs, they have to think long and hard about that. I know there's some appealing, you know, international players who might be good fits alongside Victor Wembanyama, but I think the idea of pairing Klingon and Wembanyama, what that would bring you instantly on the defensive end would be really, really hard to pass up. So we'll say Klingon goes 4, and then we got the Pistons at 5, guys. Who knows what the Detroit Pistons are going to do? I have them taking Stephon Castle. I think he meets a lot of needs for a team that has needs everywhere. That's the way I would see it playing out. But like you said at the top, I mean, this is as unpredictable as it gets.
Well, and speaking of unpredictability, too, like when you mentioned the Pistons there, how challenging is it to enter an NBA draft without a head coach?
It's challenging, right? You know, especially when you just paid $67 million for your head coach to coach one disastrous season where you finished with the worst record in the NBA for the second straight year. And for the second straight draft, you fall all the way down to number 5. Now, I don't think it's as catastrophic this year, of course, as it was last year. But Yeah, I mean, you, if you're the Pistons, you don't know exactly what kind of direction, you know, what kind of team you're going to have. A lot of that is dictated by the head coach. Now, you know, the front office, the GM, they typically handle the draft. So, you know, that part of it, and especially in this draft where you're probably just taking the best talent available and you don't have an obvious position of need, I don't know that that's a huge calculation for the Pistons. But, I mean, this is a team that has to get somebody in place. You have to have some sense of direction. I mean, there's been virtually no progress, you know, since this team began this multi-year rebuild. And, you know, you go into a draft like this that feels like a total crapshoot, and you still have needs all over the board. So I do think Stephon Castle, you can at least talk yourself into, all right, you know, if nothing else, he's going to be one of the better, more versatile defenders in the class. He's got to work on the shooting. He was 26-27% at UConn last season, but he has a pedigree. He was the top recruit, you know, coming out of the 2023 high school class. And, you know, one thing that's interesting with both Castle and Klingon guys, you know, I heard Danny Hurley talk about, look, these teams are going to be blown away by what they see from Castle and Klingon in workouts, because that's not what they were asked to do necessarily at UConn. Both of those guys were asked to be lesser versions of themselves for the betterment of the team. And I think the belief is that both Castle and Klingon have more to their game that they didn't necessarily show at the college level.
Nick, Edie, I think the consensus around him was, hey, he's not an NBA player, not quick enough. He's got some flaws. It's not going to translate to the NBA. But I'm getting the sense there's some movement, there's some enthusiasm for him to go maybe higher than people think, maybe top 10, top 15. What are your thoughts on where Edie goes and any other bets that you'd recommend at this moment?
Yeah, the Edie thing is really interesting. You know, somebody that if this draft was taking place in like 1991, he might be the number one overall pick, but you just don't see, you know, 4 or 5 year college big men being discussed as lottery picks anymore. But I think part of it is he picked the perfect draft to come out, right? I mean, if this was a normal draft, I don't think we'd be talking about Zach Edie maybe going off the board at 12 to the Oklahoma City Thunder, or, you know, there's been some rumblings he could go as high as like 9 to Memphis. I think there's a real chance we see him come off the board in the late lottery. You know, I do think OKC would have to think long and hard about that at 12. You know, at that point in the draft, and especially in this draft, you're not really drafting for need, but they very obviously need a backup big man, just somebody to give them, you know, 15 minutes off the bench, take some fouls when Chet Holmgren isn't out there. You know, Portland at 14, I think would be interesting as well. That's a team that obviously is in a rebuild. They have some pieces already. They have another pick higher in the draft at 7. So maybe you grab a higher upside player there and you take who's ultimately in a roundabout way, kind of a safe pick in Zach Edie at 14. But that's a market I'm staying away from. I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen with Edie. But in terms of what I'm betting, guys, it comes down to Klingon. I really think Donovan Klingon 5-1 to go number 4 overall is a really good value. I think +350 to go number 3 overall. You could really play both of those. His draft pick over under is 3.5, and it is juiced to the under. So there are some breadcrumbs there, but I don't see Donovan Klingon making it past the Spurs at 4.
This next one, we're going to give this a lot less time than the ESPN and ABC broadcast certainly will later, but Bronny James, his draft position set at 47.5. It's -140 to the over, +110 under, -135 to be drafted by the Lakers, favorite in that market. I hear your sigh. How are you evaluating Bronny James' draft position?
Yeah, I know we have to talk about it. I just don't care, guys, as I'm sure you don't either. I would take the over on the draft position, because I do think if we see him selected on Thursday evening, it will be to the Lakers at 55, right? And, you know, I think the Celtics have a chance to do something very funny and take him at 54, right ahead of the Lakers. But I don't think they want to open themselves up to that circus. I don't think any team other than the Lakers should really be all that interested in opening themselves up to the circus that Bronny James brings. You know, there's this idea that, well, you know, he's going to juice the G League, right? And everybody's going to go want to watch our G League team, and they'll buy Bronny James G League jerseys. Like, has anybody ever even seen a G League jersey? Like, I just don't think that's really going to happen. I don't think it's going to be enough impact on the bottom line that teams want to take on this responsibility. That's going to be, you know, a media circus throughout the season. You're going to be fielding questions about him. There's one obvious landing spot for Bronny James, guys, and it's the Lakers at 55.
Nick, go ahead.
No, I was going to say in the last 30 seconds, any big name player you think changes teams here?
You know, in terms of guys who maybe haven't been discussed quite as much, you know, Brandon Ingram is an interesting one. He's on an expiring deal. I think it would make a lot of sense for the Pels to explore moving on from him. You know, I think Philly, if they can't land Paul George, that could be a fit. The Rockets, maybe the Mavs look into it. The Cavaliers, maybe a Garland for Brandon Ingram swap. That's somebody who's not being discussed a whole lot, who I do think we could see on the move come July.
Nick, can always count on you for awesome insight. Thanks for your time, pal.
Anytime, guys.
Nick Whalen, doing great stuff over there at RotoWire as well as SiriusXM NBA Radio. Follow him on X at Whalen. The L, though, is a one. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.